Jory's got sunglasses on, which means it's going to be a weird episode. It's also going to be a weird episode because I'm sure the wildest training camp story you've ever heard in your life is going to happen in this episode, and it involves Aaron Rodgers. Like, that's a tease you cannot top. We're going to take a look at Lions camp, Bengals camp, and all the big news, Steelers camp, Commanders camp, Eagles. How are they going to repeat? We got a lot to get to. It's time for Inside Coverage right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage, the where, how, why, everything that you need to know about the NFL. She's Jory Epstein. I'm Jason Fitz. Jory is on training camp tour, and that means she wears her sunglasses at night in the hotel. I don't know. It's kind of a badass look. Like, Jory coming in just like coming in sort of Top Gun-ish. Like, you got the aviators. Like, it's a movie reference. It's, you know, you've never seen it. But there's still, like, a power to the whole look, Jory. I like this for you. Like, maybe sunglasses are the new Jory thing.
I was just wearing them on my head, and then you guys were like, put them on your face, and how could I say no to a great idea like that? We are in full training camp tour chaos vibes, and we're going to embrace that this show.
C-Rob gave us a little bit of the sense of his overall experience so far, so let's just be real. Are you a powdered egg girly? Like, what are we doing here on this? Because, like, you know...
Powdered egg?
Yeah, like, hotel scrambled eggs are usually powdered eggs. Mm. They're not real. Like, so are you going down to the Continental Breakfast and getting a little, like, a little brekkie from the cont?
Right now, I'm in Philadelphia. It's okay. We're good. Right now, I'm in Philadelphia, and there's a diner I go to here to get some eggs in the morning. So I wouldn't say they're that powdered, but it was definitely diner vibes. All around. So I would say there's a lot of things chaotic about this trip, and breakfast is one of them, in large part because I keep going to teams that decide they want to practice at 8 a.m. and have their coaches speak before that. And that has been wild. First, it was the Lions who were scheduling Dan Campbell at 8 a.m. on purpose, followed by training camp at 8:30. And now it has been the Commanders and Eagles who are like, oh, it's hot outside, let's start earlier. And I'm like, we could not do that. So yeah, 7:15 Dan Quinn on a Sunday morning. What else would you want to be doing?
I mean, all I know is in my mind, you ran to get egg whites and then you ran to meet with Dan Quinn. And like this, all of this is perfect in my mind. It's perfectly encapsulating Jory. You are on your training camp tour. And I'll be honest, I was riveted to see some of your writing on the Lions because, you know, we've talked a lot about the fact that there's a lot of wholesale changes, but it felt like maybe, and you tell me, you were living it, eating it, breathing it, but just reading it, it felt like maybe there was a bit of a clapback from the Lions, from players about sort of how down we are on the number of changes that are happening within the organization.
I definitely think there was a sense of like, do you think that because our coordinators left, the players aren't here anymore, the talent isn't here anymore, the ideas aren't here anymore? And even on the coaching side, there was this sense of, okay, yes, Ben Johnson's gone, and no one is denying he was a great play caller and a great pass game coordinator. But Hank Fraley, who I talk about every 4 minutes on this show, their offensive line coach and run game coordinator, is still there. So when you think about some of the concepts they had, their run game actually isn't really changing. It's mostly just their pass game concepts. Then you go defense, and it's like, okay, well, their defensive coordinator, Calvin Shepard, he was on the staff under Aaron Glenn. And so I think when you look at that, you say, this staff should be able to continue some of the same ideas. And I think it's less about, will the scheme be the same? And it's more about, will the play calling rhythm develop early in the season or later in the season? And then you have guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown telling me like, oh, and by the way, we think Jared Goff is underrated. You guys all don't understand how great he is. And just because he doesn't have spectacular plays like Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, you think that he's not great, but he is. So there's a definite like chip on their shoulder vibe after the early playoff loss to Washington. And also this idea of like, we're more comfortable as underdogs in Detroit. And so this is actually a better place for us to be in than we were a year ago.
It's an interesting concept to turn yourself back into an underdog, right? Like, to be philosophical here for a second, because the Lions spent a long time living with everyone doubting the organization, right? But now you think about it and there's these heaping expectations. And, you know, I think I almost forgot till I watched quarterback. We talked a little bit about it on the episode with C-Rob, but watching quarterback, it's just a reminder of how dominant that season was. And how bad the final moment of that season was. Like, to get your butt kicked that way by the Commanders. A lot of mitigating factors, a lot of reasons. But it is interesting when you couch it that way, because I feel like the pressure is mounting for Detroit to make something of this moment that they're in. And it's interesting that even in that mounting pressure, they can still find a way to look around and say, nobody believes in us. I'm not sure that's really the case.
Right. I think there's a difference in that. Like, I'm in Philadelphia right now, and we'll get to the Eagles later in this conversation. But one thing I'll note is they're very much like, the 2024 Eagles are gone. We're not focused on the Super Bowl. We're not focused on what we were and how we want to build off it. We're focusing on clean slate, 0-0, do the best we can every day. The Lions are very different in that they are saying, actually, we do want to take what happened to us in the playoffs and build off it. Now, obviously, one had success and went all the way, and the other did not. But Dan Campbell told his team as the Lions started training camp, like, we are out to finish what we started, and we're going to close out some of these debts. He said they were going to have a reckoning. So they definitely are trying to use the motivation from last year and not say, we're a new team, new coordinators, new year. It's no, we're the team that last year didn't follow up from our 15-2 season and the NFC championship appearance beforehand in the prior year, and we are going to be the team that gets it done this year.
And it is at least a fair point when you think about the talent on that roster. Like, there is something to, as much as I find myself infatuated sometimes with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, and I think the point that I've made repeatedly here is you're not just replacing a coordinator, you're trying to replace the best offensive coordinator in the league in the minds of some. So, like, it's got to be a home run. But there is an element of, hey, part of that lies with they've got just player after player after player on that offense that's incredible. New center, though, and you're bringing in a rookie to try and come in and accomplish a lot on an offensive line that was one of, if not the best in the NFL. You've talked a lot about your love of their offensive line coaching process, but I do think, isn't it fair for all of us to step back and say, hey, a change at center is significant for this team?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Frank Ragnow was one of the better setters in this league during the time that he played. And I had talked to him in training camp a year ago, and it was really clear that he knew everything that was going on. He was taking certain protections off of Jared Goff's plate. He was really making sure he and the line were on the same page and that the line was on the same page as the rest of the roster. And when you have a younger guy come in and do that, it's not necessarily the same vibe. Now, when I talked to left tackle Taylor Decker at camp this year about how you bring a new guy along, you say, look, we actually want him to make the calls and not be corrected every time during training camp, because even if he doesn't correctly identify the Mike linebacker or make the Mike point, etc., he needs to develop that confidence, because if he doesn't develop the confidence, he's not ever going to feel comfortable making it in the speed of the game. And so I think that there is this sense of, what's the give and take of, like, you need the five on the same page, but if they're all on the same other page relative to what the assignment had called for, that might be better sometimes than always undermining your center. But it is interesting, because Frank Ragnow came in and was like, well, Matthew Stafford had been doing this forever. And then you have Jared Goff get here, and it's like, well, now Frank Ragnow learned from Matthew Stafford, and so Jared Goff can kind of let it be on him. And there's this just a cycle, and I see it on different teams. I mean, when I covered the Cowboys, Dak Prescott came into the league in 2016, and Travis Frederick was a perennial Pro Bowl center. But then by the time Travis retired and Tyler Biadasz came in, the next Wisconsin center, it was like, okay, well, Tyler was learning from Dak. So it's a normal life cycle event in teams, but I do think that given how reliant the Detroit Lions are on their scheme and on their offensive line to propel that scheme, it is going to take a little bit of time at the beginning of the season.
In honor of Frank Schwab, we should say on Wisconsin. I think we're obligated to do that whenever we say something complimentary about a Badger.
I've talked to a lot of Wisconsin guys the last couple of days, between Biadasz and Washington, and then Zach Bond in Philadelphia. So yes, I've had my fill of Badgers.
This is, you know,
I like mentioned Scott Tolzien being a coach in New Orleans, and then Zach Bond's like, oh yeah, Wisconsin guy. I'm like, yes, but of course.
Frank Schwab's favorite episode that we've ever done in the history of the show. Okay, the next camp let's take a look at, because you've been to several, is the Bengals. And I want to go here next because there is some news. Per Tom Pelissero, Trey Hendrickson plans to end his holdout and report to training camp Wednesday. Sources tell he and Rap Sheet. The NFL sack leader doesn't have a new deal yet. That's important. It seems unlikely he'll practice until he does, but talks continue, and now he's in the building. It should be noted, reminder to everybody, that the change in the collective bargaining agreement a few years ago means that you can't simply waive the fees. So the fines, I should say. So the $200,000 in fines he's already been hit with, that's just money out of his pocket, right? So he walks into camp. He's not going to practice in all likelihood, but at least he's not going to bleed money. So what do you make of it?
Yeah, so I visited the Cincinnati Bengals the first Wednesday of their training camp last week, and neither Trey Hendrickson, their veteran edge rusher, nor Shamar Stewart, their first round rookie defensive end, were there. And it's kind of like, I went into the locker room and you kind of look on the left side of the locker room right before there's an opening in a fridge with Gatorades, and two of the four lockers on that wall were empty within this four locker stretch, and you had unopened packages and towels that were still rolled up nicely and a bunch of cleats. And it's like, it was very clear that the defensive line room, and particularly the edge rusher position, were missing a couple guys. Now, when I talked to people in the organization there, from teammates to coaches to front office, I really felt like the team was far less concerned at that point about veteran edge rusher Trey Hendrickson than they were about the rookie Shamar Stewart, because yes, it was a new defense for both of them, and they both have to learn Al Golden's system after he replaces Luana Rumo, but Trey had been there before, and like, his bread and butter is sacks. Like, he's had 35 sacks the last two seasons. He knows how to prepare. He's been in this league long time. Shamar Stewart is like, it's a huge jump doing what you're doing at the college game to the NFL game. And oh, by the way, when the Cincinnati Bengals drafted him in the first round, they were drafting a guy who got a lot of pressure on the quarterback, but did not often successfully convert that pressure into a sack. And so he wasn't even finishing at the college level, and it's going to take time at the NFL level. Now, between now and then, the Bengals and Shamar Stewart did work out the language that they were arguing over, and the Bengals got to keep the words that they could void the contracts for off-field violations at any time. Those three words, at any time, were what I was told was the holdup. And Shamar Stewart got, I think it was like $500K extra in his pocket. So now you fast forward to Trey Hendrickson, and he's kind of doing what Terry McLaurin's doing in Washington, and we will get back to Washington, which is this idea of, if you at least show up to camp, then you're not getting fined anymore. You could say you're injured. You could say you're not feeling well. There's a lot of reasons you don't have to practice if you're concerned that practicing will hurt your leverage and or risk an injury before you have your contract, but you have to do that. I think for me, why I'm not convinced that showing up to practice will be this immediate fix to the solution is that the Bengals for a long time never gave multi-year guarantees in their contracts. They changed that for quarterback Joe Burrow, and then they changed that for receiver Jamar Chase as well. If it was just Joe Burrow, you could say, we don't do this, the quarterback's the exception. But then you do it with Jamar, and Trey Hendrickson's like, well, then I want guarantees after the first year. Jamar got them. But there is a case to be made, and I would argue the Bengals are making it, that Jamar Chase is in the prime of his career and he is the best at his position. They do not believe that Trey Hendrickson at 31 is in the prime of his career, nor that he's the best at his position. Now, clearly his sack numbers are fantastic. His run game is not necessarily to the level of his pass defense, but it's there. But really, this is more of like, we don't think you're Jamar Chase of your position, and you might. And I'm curious, Fitz, like, what do you think when you think about what's fair? And this is not a second contract. This is his third.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a hot take to say that Trey isn't the best rusher in the NFL, right? Like,
right.
He's in that tier of upper echelon. He's a guy that really helps this team. Like, he's a guy that wants to go out and get paid at his age. Of course, he wants to go get the money that sacks warrant, for sure. But if you were starting a team from scratch today and you had your choice of any defensive player, any rusher, are we really going to take Trey Hendrickson over TJ Watt or Myles Garrett or Max Crosby? No, I think the answer to that is no across the board, you know,
right?
Especially when you start to look at some of the advanced analytics, things like tackles for loss instead of just looking at sacks. There is a case to be made. Like, look, you're one of the best in the league at your position at this particular skill set, and it's a very important skill set, but it's not a hot take to say you're not Jamar Chase. Like,
right.
And look, we can debate all day long whether or not Chase is really better than Justin Jefferson. I think, you know, in these situations, you're splitting hairs. You're talking about somebody young that can give years to the organization, and somebody that, frankly, you have no choice if you're the Bengals but to reward with a massive contract, get ahead of the market. You ain't getting ahead of anything with Trey at this point. Like, this is going to be his last big payday. So I actually don't have a hard time with the Bengals standing firm on this. I do think there's some fairness in the conversation of, hey, they did go out and take care of Jamar. They did go out and take care of Joe. They have gone out and taken care of T. Like, at some point, this conversation about the Bengals are cheap, to me, is sort of like what I say about Jerry Jones all the time. We got to stop judging him based on who he was in the 90s. Like, this version of the Bengals has put a ton of guaranteed money in escrow sitting around for some superstar players. So it isn't that to me.
Right. I definitely agree with you. The one thing I will note is that when you look at T. Higgins' extension, it did not have the level of guarantees that Jamar Chase had. So I do think that there was something to be said of, like, they weren't fully breaking or they weren't following the Joe and Jamar formula for T. But I agree. I think when I talked to people back at the combine, there's this idea of like the Bengals are going to be able to keep two of the three of their receivers and Trey Hendrickson, and people assumed T wasn't going to be there. Well, then it turned out that T was kind of willing to bet on himself in the sense of like get a lot of money, but not a ton of guarantees, and have a little bit of a team friendly ability to cut you in the middle of the deal, but you still get to play with Jamar and Joe. And by the way, Jamar and T get along way better than most receiver duos I see. And now I do think Trey Hendrickson is going to get done. I mean, I know that we have Frank Schwab who is like, TJ's getting traded. And I'm like, calm down. You thought Brandon Ayuk was getting traded. You thought TJ, like, I'm got to take the victory lap on that. Not because I'm any good, but just because Frank loves buying into hype on some of these things. But I think that when you look at it, it does seem like Trey's going to get done. And that was kind of what I felt like the coaching staff was saying. It's almost like this roll of the eyes that I saw all the time with the Cowboys of, hey, this is going to get done, so can we just get it done now rather than in 3 weeks, and then we have three more weeks to practice? Because, by the way, we play in the AFC North, and you still have to go against the Ravens, and the Steelers have Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf now, in addition to that defense and Mike Tomlin, and oh, the Browns, okay, maybe they're not concerned about the Browns, but they are concerned about the others. Like, let's just be realistic. I mean, is that like, the Bengals feel like they could be contenders, and I do believe that every week and day that Shamar Stewart and Trey Hendrickson are not practicing and getting a hold of that new defense, that is hurting their chances at the championship.
That's the damned if you do, damned if you don't portion of this, because the Bengals are notorious every single year for starting slow. They've got to look internally to figure out why they start slow. It kept them out of the playoffs last year, starting slow. So it does make, it would make me nervous if I'm a Bengals fan about Shamar being, hey, great, he's going to be much better by week 15. Well, that's the case for this whole team. That doesn't help you right now. You got to win games in September. I think that that's a really fair reason why fans will panic over this. But at the end of the day, if you're Trey Hendrickson, you're not going to give up the full year. In all likelihood, you're probably not going to give up the full year. So if we're really going to play chicken, the team is going to win a game of chicken 95% of the time. And if they know they're going to win the game of chicken eventually, it impacts the way you play chicken. Like, I don't think that that's unfair for the Bengals to turn around and say, what are you really going to sit out 10 weeks and then come in week 10 and maybe be injured? Is that the approach with a 31-year-old edge rusher? Is that going to help you get more guarantees next year? No, like all of this is, the team has to know that. So I think the power still lies with the Bengals, even though the slow start should make everybody panic.
I would agree. And you actually have reason to be assuaged, Fitz, because understanding that they continue to start slowly and not have the success in September and October they have in November, December, the Bengals have made an organizational change, and no longer do they begin their practices in the middle of the afternoon. They are now beginning at 10 a.m. with meetings beforehand in order to start faster their day and hope that they start faster during the season.
Well, you know what? Who knew? Who knew that that's all? So you're telling me if we start to record early in the day,
That we're I will not be awake for it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's amazing the little things that coaches convince themselves will make a huge difference in the process of like, you know what? You know what's really going to keep us from having one of those three turnover games in September where we lose a game we should win? Ah, a 10 a.m. meeting instead of a noon meeting. That's the special sauce that's going to fix it all.
Well, you feel better though, don't you? Yeah.
I do, actually, a little bit. All right, we'll take a break because we got to get into the Steelers. Jory has seen it up close. What's the level of panic in Pittsburgh? I feel like I just did an alliterative headline that everybody needs. Panic in Pittsburgh!
Why are we panicking? I guess we'll find out
because Aaron Rodgers threw an interception, of course. We'll figure out how panicked we should be after a quick break. Nothing speaks to our personalities more than the fact that I'm like, panic in Pittsburgh. And Jory's like, wait, why are we panicking in Pittsburgh again? Like, had a pretty good offseason.
And I'm terrible for show suspense.
Look, and I am like, I'm Kermit the Frog and everything. Like the meme where he's like, ah, everywhere. That's me and everything that I do. And so, you know, I'm running through the entire stadium at this point just going, ah, because Aaron Rodgers threw an interception. Now, we have laughed about this on the show already without you, simply because to point out again, you never know what the situation is for a quarterback. You never know what they're working on. They should be throwing picks and interceptions in camp. These are all things that we know. But you saw it up close and personal. So seeing the Steelers and – you know, the Aaron Rodgers and the DK and turning around and throwing his hands up. Like, did you get a sense of frustration in Pittsburgh at all for the early going of training camp?
Definitely not, which is why I was confused by your note of panic. It was funny that we are watching practice. I guess this would have been last Thursday, which was the Pittsburgh Steelers' first practice. No pads yet, but their first practice at all of training camp. And as a reminder, Aaron Rodgers was not there during OTAs. He got there towards the end of minicamp, and so, or for minicamp, which means that he had very little time with the team. And also because he was coming in the week of minicamp, Mike Tomlin's like, hey, just watch for a minute and get a sense of that. So then we go through individual drills during practice, and we get to the team drills portion of practice, and Aaron Rodgers lines up behind center. He's got DK Metcalf off to his left, and he tries Metcalf one-on-one against a cover three defense, and Patrick Queen intercepts it. And the crowd goes crazy. The defense goes crazy as everyone is running over to Patrick Queen. It's kind of this like, okay, maybe it's not going to be all smooth sailing for Aaron Rodgers. But I think to me, it was actually much less that. First of all, the defense was excited because I think in most of the camps I've been to, the defense just looks way readier than the offense. But I would say that when we talked to Aaron Rodgers later that day, he said he believes in throwing interceptions during training camp because he has to try things, especially when he's on a new team with a new cast, and he needs to know, hey, what are you going to do if I throw it here? Or what are you going to do if I throw it to you in this situation with the defender that close? Should I do this in the game or should I not? And Aaron Rodgers said, like anyone who's followed his career knows, he has not been a ball security liability throughout his career. There are many years he's had like highest touchdown percentage and lowest interception percentage of all the quarterbacks in the league. And so he says, in the games, it'll be okay. But in practice, he's like, I'm going to throw more interceptions and I'm going to throw touchdowns too. So to me, this is just a classic sense of like, you need to keep learning the chemistry between each other.
This is also what we're going to do with the Steelers every single week this year, right? Like, if Aaron Rodgers,
every week I'm going to be like, I still don't know why we're panicking.
I mean, I'll go back to having just watched quarterback. We watched Jared Goff. I mean, a 5-interception game. We forget a 5-interception game that was just dreadful. If that happens for Aaron Rodgers, my God, it's just going to be apoplectic. Like it's going to be holy cow. Everything's coming to an crashing, screeching halt, like fire Tomlin, get rid of everybody. The Steelers are bums. Like there has to be some wiggle room in all of this to me. And that's what's maddening about it is I genuinely believe the Steelers have a really favorable open to the schedule. Hard to know that now. But like as we sit today, it looks like a favorable beginning to the schedule. And then there's a lot of tough games. I could totally see the Steelers coming out of the gates hot and then coming back to earth. And I don't think that has to mean that anything went tragically wrong. It's just like this is a process for Pittsburgh. And I just don't know that the noise surrounding the Steelers will ever let that process play out the right way.
Right. I mean, just to tell our listeners who aren't looking at it, the Steelers start out with the Jets, Seahawks, Patriots, Vikings, bye week Browns, and then week 7 Bengals. I wouldn't be surprised if they go into the Bengals game undefeated. I mean, that's what, 5-0, and you had a bye already, and so Aaron Rodgers could be pretty fresh. This defense is good, and yes, they lost Minkah Fitzpatrick, but they got Jalen Ramsey, TJ Watt's back. I mean, they've got a lot of good pieces. They picked up Darius Slay in the secondary. They extended safety Deshaun Elliott. And then you have the offense, and Aaron Rodgers is definitely the best quarterback they've had since Ben Roethlisberger, and especially Ben Roethlisberger at the end of the career. Aaron Rodgers is better. And I know you could say, oh, what did he do last year? He actually was not bad last year. Was it 26 touchdowns to 11 interceptions? And that was in his first year off the torn Achilles. And most people around the league would say, even if you're 25 years old and your first year coming off a torn Achilles or ACL, et cetera, like usually not until like that 18-month mark that you really feel back. He also tweaked his calf at the beginning of the season. So I'm not saying he'll for sure play great, but I think there's a lot of reason to think he could. The question will be, as we saw in that first throw of team drills, can Aaron and DK get on the same page? Because they did lose George Pickens, and so it's not like they're super deep at receiver, but I think they have a lot of talent.
That's the part of it to me that's like, if we could live in a vacuum and, you know, just eliminate the weirdness of this job. This is not a new thing I've said to you, but I think the weirdest thing about our jobs for any of us that cover the league is that you're asked to write a book report every single chapter. And so after 2 chapters, it might be the best book you've ever read. Well, what if the rest of the book sucks? And like, so then you're forced every single week is a new chapter within your book report, and you don't have the grace of knowing how it's going to turn out. For Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, there's just not going to be a lot of grace given. Like, it has to be all or nothing for so many people. Like, if this team starts off 5-0, it's going to be Super Bowl or bust is going to be the headline. And I think there's a whole middle ground here where, like, we just watched the Detroit Lions have a season for the ages that did not result in a Super Bowl. Like, we have to understand that you can be the best team in the league and not win a Super Bowl. Like, the middle part of this is, like, Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers need to be really good by the end of the season to give themselves a chance if they get a playoff berth. That's just not a sexy take in all of this. And we want life or death. We want absolute heroes or villains out of the first week of the season. And I think for Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, it's going to take a minute to normalize into what they even are. I just don't think we know.
I love that you're giving a nuanced take, and I don't want to take away from that because it was so beautiful. But you started off with a line that just really caught my attention, and so I have to go in that direction, because you said that one of the weirdest parts of our jobs is this idea that we have to give takes ahead of time. But that was not the weirdest part of my job at the Pittsburgh Steelers, because the weirdest part of my job at the Pittsburgh Steelers is that I'm interviewing DK Metcalf one-on-one, and he is telling us, like, oh yeah, he's suite mates with Aaron Rodgers, which means that they each have a bedroom, they got a bathroom in between with a toilet and a shower. And DK had kind of, like, Aaron and DK had mentioned to the group that they were sharing a bathroom, and it was a little bit weird because Aaron's like, we're sharing a toilet and a shower. And we're like, you mean a bathroom? Like, why didn't you just say that? And then I'm like, DK, you mentioned that you're like having all these conversations with Aaron in the room. What's an example of a conversation? And here I'm thinking, Fitz, that they are about to tell me, like, oh yeah, we talked about like this curl, or we talked about what we're going to do on here. Maybe when we talked about this coach we both played for. And DK goes, well, the toilet is super loud in our room. And so Aaron tells me at night, if you have to pee, don't flush the toilet. And he was like, okay, I won't. And I'm like, what is going on with my life that this is my job? And then he said that at 9:30 the night before, so I was there on Thursday, at 9:30 Wednesday night, DK went to the bathroom and he texts Aaron like, hey, you up? And Aaron's like, yeah. And he's like, all right, bet, I'm about to flush. So I'm just like, okay, this is my job to report this. And then I tell DK, I'm like, can I write that? And he was like, yeah, for sure. So then I get back and I'm like at camp, and I think this is the funniest thing ever, that like he's asking Aaron Rodgers permission to flush the toilet at 9:30 at night. And I'm like telling this story to my brother that I want to report it. And he's like, well, do you think Aaron would care if you report this? And I'm like, well, I don't know, like, I don't think he'd care, but I guess you make a good point. He definitely has thoughts about media sometimes, like, maybe I should try and find him and ask him. And at the Steelers camp, we're allowed to eat meals in the cafeteria, so lunch and dinner, we're in the same cafeteria as the players and coaches. We have a shorter window, but I'm like, you know what, maybe if I wait outside the cafeteria, Aaron will come by, and then like right when the media window opens, I'll go in and kind of like hang by the entrance. So I do all of this, don't see him before I get in. First, I don't see him, and then I see a guy in a blue shirt wearing headphones sitting with a bunch of other people, and Aaron's there, and I'm like, amazing, I will sit by the entrance and work on my computer, transcribing stuff until he's ready to go. I see him go, he's taking his dishes to the, whatever you call the dish carousel in cafeterias, and he starts walking over, and I was like, can I ask you a question? He like takes his headphones out, and I was like, DK told me a story, but I wanted to make sure you're okay with it before I write it. And he was like, what did he tell you? And I was like, he mentioned that your toilet's loud, so you said if you guys pee in the middle of the night, don't flush, but that he asked permission last night to flush the toilet. Aaron just like breaks out in a smile and is like, yeah, that's okay. I was like, all right, thanks, just wanted to be respectful. So all of which is to say, when you say the weirdest part of our job is predicting, I'm like, no, the weirdest part is that I stalked Aaron Rodgers to ask if I could report on his toilet flushing preferences at night.
That is the best training camp story I've ever heard. I beg Stone somehow. I don't know how you're going to cut that, put that out to the world, but the world needs all of the insight on that. I saw that and had so many questions. Like, wouldn't it be easier at that point just to pee in the shower? Like, couldn't you just like pee in the shower, run the water quiet? Like, what?
Yeah, I know. I feel like I always get on you for making bathroom related comments on this show. So I'm like, I have to be honest about my own exposure at this time.
I mean, I respect it. I just, my first thought was like, just hop, when I saw what you had posted about DK, I was like, just hop in the shower, like turn the water on, hop in the shower, like then it's not making a bunch of noise, it's quiet tinkle, and like nobody's any the wiser for it.
My mentions really taught me a lot on Friday. That's all I'm saying. But no, in May, we had a family friend's wedding, and my two brothers, my fiance, and I all shared a hotel room because, like, the hotel was expensive. So we had to, like, establish ground rules. And I'm like, guys, here are Aaron and DK's ground rules. Like, they're just like us. We did not have the same ground rules.
I mean, I lived on a tour bus for years, and it's just, like, that's just the Wild West. Like, because there's one little bathroom and 12 guys, and you're trying to pee while it's, like, oh, like, the bus is, like, you know, all over the road. I mean, it's just... It's wild. I'm telling you. I respect it. I respect it, Joy.
It was a fun day.
That's still, again, my favorite training camp story ever. How did what you see in Pittsburgh influence the way you feel the Steelers season is going to play out?
I think one thing that really stuck with me in Pittsburgh is how differently they greeted or received Aaron Rodgers compared to the Jets. Now, this is just my perspective, and maybe some players and coaches would feel differently, but I felt like the Jets were such a success-starved team that when Aaron Rodgers got there and they had gone through making this big trade and it was a whole off-season pursuit of him, that the Jets were almost in awe of Aaron Rodgers and kind of like, oh my gosh, it's like us and Aaron Rodgers putting him on this pedestal. Obviously, there's the injury and then he comes back from it. But for sure, the Steelers respect Aaron Rodgers and a lot of these guys grew up watching him, including rookie quarterback Will Howard. But I think that there's much more of like a, hey, we're the Pittsburgh Steelers and we also are one of the NFL's hallowed franchises, the same way that you are one of the NFL's hallowed players. And we are excited to have you, but you're also kind of part of our culture. Like, there is this whole thing that we're doing. It's not just Aaron Rodgers sets the tone. And I actually think that's a much healthier environment to have success with a quarterback of his caliber. Now, we'll see if it works, but I would say there's that in terms of a cultural standpoint that, like, Mike Tomlin is still there. And so I just feel like it evens out the vibes and allows for a dose of realism. And on the other hand, like, this is just a talented defensive roster. So to me, I think the offense will be good, maybe not like top five, but I think they should be top 10, top 15. And then the question to me is this a top 10 defense or a top 25 defense? Because I really think that's actually going to be the difference, especially because you still have Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow in your division.
All right, so let's move to the Commanders. Terry McLaurin's hold-in is something that you mentioned it earlier. It makes total and complete sense. Do you have any sense after seeing the Commanders on kind of what their plan is with Scary Terry?
Yeah, I think that Terry McLaurin's reporting to camp encourages me more than Trey Hendrickson and the Bengals reporting to camp. I think Terry McLaurin wants to be out there. I think he wants to continue what he's doing with Jaden Daniels. And I think his agent was also there the 2 days I was at camp. And so I think that that is telling of, like, there should be conversations going on. If not, why are you out there? It was also a little bit funny because Terry's signing autographs for the fans despite not practicing. And when I sat down with head coach Dan Quinn, he's like, yeah, he's on PUP, like the physically unable to perform list. But, you know, that list and their whole storyline is he's not practicing because he hurt his ankle last season and he's rehabbing it. But Dan Quinn made very clear to me, you know, people could come back from PUP at any time. It's not like IR where you have to be out a certain amount of time. And it's not like our IR where there's all these rules for the ramp up. You can come back and you could go right away if you want to. And I think it was kind of this like hint, hint, like nudge, nudge. He's just fine. So to me, I do think Terry gets done. I think ultimately he's not going to be like a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase type paid receiver. He's not at that caliber of production. And he's also not at their age. Again, going to be 31 this season. I do think that when you get down to DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, that's kind of probably the high end of what we're talking, which is like 30 to 32 a year, maybe some like fake years or at least voidable years thrown in there. And it could be closer to 28. I think there's a very real possibility this stays under 30. I believe he's at 23 right now. And so I do think that's kind of like high 20s. He'll get a raise, he'll get a little more time. And probably through the Commanders, you want to say like, hey, let's get you a deal that's like, in our mind, 28 a year, but maybe it looks like 30 million a year because we tack on some voidable years without guarantees at the end.
The adjustment of funny money is always wild to me. What about the adjustment for Debo? Obviously, going from San Francisco over to Washington, what's that been like?
Yeah, it was interesting. I talked to Debo while I was there, and he said the biggest change for him was actually just how much no huddle the Commanders are running under Cliff Kingsbury. I need to look up those numbers because someone told me it was something like 63% of the time last year the Commanders went no huddle and that it was like a league record. And again, I have to look this up. But I think when he looked at it, that's not what was going on with Kyle Shanahan. They did have that huddle every time. And so for Debo, that is just a change in rhythm. But that's what Cliff likes. That's what Jaden liked in college. And so that's what they wanted to run with Jaden. And they really had a lot of comfort level with it, both in terms of like clapping and cadences pre-snap that Cliff had done with Kyler Murray and he really liked, and also things Jaden had done at LSU. So I also think there might be a tiny bit of a degree that the Commanders are like, Terry, we have Debo here. Like, if you're not here, we have another receiver one. But I think in reality, both of them are very good. Neither of them is like bona fide best receiver on any team. And so you really do want to have both guys in that game.
Frank is convinced the Commanders take a step back this year. We all know it. Although, should be noted, he still thinks it's a playoff caliber team. It's just, you know, we've fallen in love. You saw him up close to personal. Like, what's sort of the vibe? Like, what's your sense?
Yeah, I think that this is a team that should be more talented and more fundamentally sound, but not necessarily as good of a record because of the fluke success they had. You're not going to get doinks in all the time. You're not going to get a Bears corner where safety just looking the other way so that you get a Hail Mary, which, by the way, like so many things had to go right. I think last year was the football gods saying, like, thank you for getting Dan Snyder out of here. In exchange, we present to you an NFC championship berth. I also think that the Commanders should be better, and I will say, despite thinking that the Commanders might have a slide back in turn of the records, and also like it could be a competitive NFC East, we don't know. I believe that Jaden Daniels should be okay. Like, I'm not super concerned about a sophomore slump. I'm curious what you think about this. And maybe it's just because I've been around them a lot and I've talked to a lot of people near him. And so I get a little bit like, oh, I understand what the recipe for success is. But when I talk to people there and I say, why don't you think that defensive coordinators are going to have figured out Jaden? Or even to some degree, I mean, with CJ Stroud last year, we saw that there was a little bit of a step back from a production standpoint. But I would argue that Jaden did not have the most talented roster his rookie year. And I think he overperformed relative to the talent. And on the flip side, what Cliff Kingsbury and some of the people there would say is, well, if you have a defense that's figuring out how Jaden operates in structure and solving that, great. He'll go out of structure. If you want to get him out of structure, great. He can throw from the pocket, and he's actually a pocket passer first. He's not escaping all the time, and that was something that he grew on over the year. Dan Quinn, their head coach, will even tell you that usually he looks at players making a second-year jump from year one to year two, but he felt like Jaden on the offensive side of the ball and Mikey Sainer still on the defensive side of the ball kind of self-corrected and made those jumps mid-year, which would suggest like they have a little bit more of that on their shoulders. And Jaden told me that he felt like the game slowed down like 20 times as much from when they first played Tampa in week one to when they played Tampa in the playoffs. So I do think there are a lot of ingredients for success that makes me feel good about this offense, about Jaden Daniels. The defense will have questions, but I think there's reason to believe that their talent fits their scheme a little better this year. And then the question to me is just like, okay, you're playing good teams. How do you match up against them?
I think also last year was a masterclass from Cliff Kingsbury on how to call an offense and how to develop a quarterback. So every time we say, well, defensive coordinators have had the whole offseason to get ready for Jaden Daniels, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury has had the whole offseason to figure out how to better utilize Jaden Daniels. Keeping Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive coordinator, I think, was a huge win for this organization, simply because remembering the timing that rookies go through, by the time they actually get into OTAs and camp, they've had so little time to actually be professional football players, and they're trying to learn an entirely new language. So Jaden Daniels did all that quickly, the virtual reality. We've seen all those things. You know, obviously, he's a wild student. But to me, if you give somebody like Cliff the opportunity now to say, okay, Cliff Kingsbury didn't even really have a chance to design specific for Jaden Daniels. He just had to figure out how to modify what he does to fit Jaden Daniels' strengths early on in the season last year. Now he's had months to sit back and say, okay, I know exactly what Jaden does and what he's comfortable with. There's a huge opportunity when you've got somebody that I think it showed such great ability last year to get the most out of that offense. And Jaden, I think Cliff is a cheat code in this process. So you have a wonderfully talented quarterback with an offensive coordinator that has shown the ability to really understand the best way to get the most out of that player. That's dynamic to me. So even with you're right, an improved roster. So we take some of the luck out of it and everything. I just think that who the Commanders were at the end of last year record-wise is actually kind of on par with where I expect them to be moving forward. Like, they got lucky, but now they're better. And so I don't think they have to get lucky to remain in that conversation. Like, I'd be really shocked to see a sophomore slump out of Jaden Daniels, because I just think the pieces around him and the way that they've sort of isolated him in this, like, to make him the best he can be. I feel like the Commanders have done a masterful job of surrounding him with what he needs.
I'm so glad you said this, Fitz, because I'm reporting a story on Jaden Daniels, what led to his success, and also the system that the Commanders set up around him that helped him achieve the success he did. I don't want to give away all my tidbits because I'm excited about them, and the story's not coming out till closer to the start of the regular season, so give it a few weeks. But there are, like, some awesome things that they are doing in that building that I'm just like, I know that we talk on the show all the time about organizations failing quarterbacks and rookie quarterbacks in particular. And I just want to be like, here, everyone else, particularly the New York Jets with like half of the last decade, like, listen to what the Commanders are doing and consider doing that or a version of that for you too. Because I think there are just so many super sharp systemic things that they put in place that should allow Jaden to succeed. And I will mention that you talk about Cliff Kingsbury. It's a huge one that they got him back. There are a lot of people who thought he would take a head coaching job elsewhere and there would be interest in him. And I don't think that most of them thought that he would get another year with Jaden. And I will also say that Dan Quinn has been very intentional about the staff with the idea that you have Cliff as the offensive coordinator. You have Brian Johnson, the former Eagles offensive coordinator, on that staff. You have Tavita Pritchard at quarterbacks coach, and you have David Blau at assistant quarterbacks coach. First of all of those guys played quarterback at a high level. I think they all played at college. I'd have to double check them, but I'm pretty sure they all played in college. Then you get to the point where they're all learning the same system. So the idea is, if Cliff takes a head coaching job elsewhere, someone who understands the system and the language could step in as Jaden's next play caller. So there really is this succession plan of, like, it's not just let's maximize now and hope Ben Johnson doesn't leave. And again, I think the Lions have a little bit of a difference because of the run game coordinator, but there is an element of establishing a consistent system for Jaden Daniels' entire career.
By the way, according to ChatGPT, last year, the Washington Commanders run approximately 64% of their offensive snaps were run out of no huddle. And yes, that would be the highest percentage in modern NFL history. Of course, Buffalo in the early 90s used a K-gun, and 1988 Cincinnati went they went no huddle, but nothing was charted back then to have those numbers. So yes, according to ChatGPT, at least.
ChatGPT and Tavita Pritchard are on the same page. That's good to know.
Well, you know, I'm a ChatGPT guy now. Like, I just run everything through ChatGPT. It tells me how to live my life. It tells me that information is correct. You know, I'm just here. I'm here to be a beacon of research. Really, I'm just here to type it into a little computer that tells me everything I need to know. We'll get one more camp in. It's an important one. You saw the Eagles. How are we feeling post Super Bowl? Take a quick break and we'll answer that next. Welcome back. Is the pressure mounting so hard on the Eagles to repeat that there's a state of chaos all throughout Philadelphia? I'm just doing what I do. I'm just making sure Jory rolls her eyes. I'm telling you, I can get, come on now.
You can't roll. You can't see if I roll my eyes at the sunglasses. Would come in handy.
You can't come out of the University of ESPN like I did and not be able to turn anything into wild sensationalism. Come on now.
I guess at USA Today, they didn't teach us that.
Come on. J school? No, I got E school. E school means everything's a headline and talk about the Cowboys. That's what I grew up. Okay. So burned all that. The Eagles, you saw it up close and personal. I think it is kind of funny because usually Super Bowl hangover is something we over obsess about. I don't really feel like it's been, at least in the consciousness of what I'm consuming, I'm not seeing this great, like, oh my God, how is Philly going to manage to do this again? Like, it feels like things are kind of quiet looking at the Eagles. Did you feel any sort of way with that when you saw them up close?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of times you get this team, they win the Super Bowl, and it's like, if you're not the New England Patriots, this is so new, this is another level for you, all of that. For sure, this was new for some of the roster, and obviously there are guys who have been added to the team since the the Super Bowl. But this is a team that's been to the Super Bowl 3 times in the last 8 seasons and 1 twice in the last 8 seasons. So this has become kind of the expectation in Philly. And it's more like, hey, everything goes crazy and we panic if we end up a 10-win team, but don't make it far in the playoffs. And we saw that 2 seasons ago. So that's not a hypothetical. I would say that defensively, they still look like a huge problem. Year two of Vic Fangio, and obviously he massively exceeded expectations during last season. And then you have an offense where poor Jalen Hurts has had a different play caller like 10 of the last 11 seasons or something like that. I remember I wrote a story when I first got to Yahoo about him having a 7th play caller in 8 years, and he's had, I think, 3 more since then. So definitely, I think that was pre-Brian Johnson, pre-Kellen Moore, and now we have Kevin Petullo. Now it helps that Kevin Petullo has been in the building through Shane Steichen, Brian Johnson, and Kellen Moore coordinating. So he's not brand new to these guys, but it is a new play caller, a new guy in your ear. So I think this defense should be really good again, especially if they can stay healthy. And then the question on offense is, again, like, how much are we emphasizing Saquon? How much are we emphasizing the passing game? I don't really think we should have questions about the offensive line, because remember last year, Jason Kelce retired and the line was still good enough to get a 2,000-yard rusher out of Saquon and destroy Chris Jones and the Chiefs defense in the Super Bowl. But I think those are the questions. It's more like, how are they going to win than are they going to win?
Yeah, I mean, the pieces that made them so wildly dominant are not aged out either. Like, there's just right. a...
No, they have the youngest defense in the league. I sat down with Zach Bond, and I think at 26 years old, he's the oldest person on that defense.
They, and this is... It's never too early to start
old,
the...
Yeah, that's another story.
That's facts. It's never too early to start the Howie Roseman greatness conversation that just continues to just resonate every single week. But, man, you feel it. Like, to your point, it's a young defense. Also, there's just no reason to think that Saquon's about to take a step back. They still have, an elite wide receiver room, and Jalen Hurts has turned into Jalen Hurts. Like, there's just no reason. I can't pinpoint something on Philly and say, you know what, that's the reason that the whole league's going to catch up to him. Like, things bounced the right way for him last year, certainly. That Rams game could have gone differently, certainly. There were moments that, you know, things. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a given any team repeats, because winning a Super Bowl is more luck than good, in my opinion. But there's no reason they won't be one of the dominant teams. Like, it's just, I feel it. So you caught a Peyton Manning story? What we got a Peyton Manning story, Joy?
Yeah, I haven't written this yet, so the editors might be mad that I talk about it on the show. But when I was talking to Zach Bond, he mentioned that in Nick Sirianni's range of off-season projects of what do you do the year after the Super Bowl, it didn't really say to avoid the Super Bowl hangover. It was more just like to stay focused, stay the mindset. One of the projects was Peyton Manning spoke to the Eagles Leadership Council, which is about 15 to 20 players. Zach and I were talking about this more in the sense that he had gotten a contract extension, and Peyton Manning mentioned that he always viewed contract extensions not as rewarding what he'd done, but as rewarding what he now needed to go do. But there's a lot of things like that that transferred to the post-Super Bowl year in just terms of how you stay focused. And Nick Sirianni had another line I really liked this week, which was that they want to do the ordinary better than anybody else. So I think that there's a lot of like, hey, Landon Dickerson, their left guard, was emphasizing that the 2024 Eagles are no more. They're the 2025 Eagles. And it's not like, oh, no one there is talking like you need to defend your championship. It's more like you are 0-0 and you need to go win games and you need to stay humble about it. And I think it's like ring ceremony. You put that behind you. Now you move forward. And I do think that this group is really interesting in that there are so many of them who were there for the Super Bowl, saw how bad it could be right after, and then were there for the Super Bowl again, just in that 3-year stretch. And so they do understand, like, hey, just because we win 10 games start the season doesn't mean that year is going to go well and our defensive coordinator isn't going to get fired in the middle of the year and we're going to spiral. So I think there's just a little bit of a, we've been there before and we understand what it takes. That reminds me a little bit of what the Patriots used to have.
Yeah, there is a element I hadn't really thought about with those two Super Bowls in such close proximity to each other and how that impacts what I think is a pretty natural moment post. Like, you spend your whole life working for anything. When you accomplish it, it's easy to sit there and say, hey, you know what? We're just going to run it back and do it again. But it's, I mean, the point of contracts, like when you win Super Bowls, a lot of guys get paid. And when you win Super Bowls, you do get the ring and you go out and you party. And like, you've spent all of these years in your life just waiting and coveting this one thing, and then you get it. I mean, I think human nature says that it can cause some people to lose just a little bit of their edge, and a little bit right. of your edge can be enough to, you know, that can be the difference in a matchup in any particular game. So like, there is, it's easier said than done. The human element of it to me says it's easier said than done to just be like, all right, going to run it back this year. We're not, you know, I just figuring out a way to do that is difficult. But your point is a really important one here of having seen such a fall after that Super Bowl. Like, it wasn't that it was just like, oh, well, the next year we lost the Super Bowl. No, like it was a disaster for Philly and that in between. I do wonder how much that changes the way people are able to refocus and remotivate in this situation.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something. I remember I did a story when I was in college on a high school basketball team that won 105 games straight. And I remember my dad calling me and being like, hey, they're coming to Austin for the state championship. You should cover them. Like, how do you even stay motivated when you haven't lost in 4 years? And they ended up losing the game that I was at in the championship. But I do think there's this element of like, you have to find new ways to define success. And I was talking to that with someone in the building today of like, the same way that I think the Commanders shouldn't define success and if they've improved this season just by if their record's improving. I know that they need to notice that as an important benchmark, and that's what gets guys jobs and that's what gets you in the playoffs. But I think it's like, hey, let's say you're an edge rusher and you got X number of sacks and forced fumbles last year. Well, maybe you'll get that this year, or maybe they'll start double teaming and chipping you. And then you can say, well, how many times did I recognize my cue from film and end up in the right place because of it, even if someone else ended up making the tackle? Or if I'm the receiver, like, how many times did I run that route in a way that, like, hey, maybe AJ Brown ran it in a way that opened up Saquon to do something? And I mean, I think that Nick Sirianni even mentioned that Saquon won the SB for that spinning hurdle, backwards hurdle situation. And he's like, when I say do the ordinary better than anyone, I think about the blocks that AJ is throwing on that play. Like, that's the ordinary, so that Saquon can do the extraordinary, but you're doing it all that. And so I think there is going to be this emphasis of like, yes, you want to be extraordinary and you want to thrive in those moments, but you start by doing the ordinary first. And if you're redefining success as doing those things well, then you're able to achieve success on a more regular basis than if you're only defining success by the ultimate result. And I would argue that Howie Roseman does that in managing the team of, hey, it's not just like, did this draft pick hit? It's like, oh, you have a draft pick. Do you use it to draft, or do you use it to trade for someone, or do you use it for this? And it's like, everything is a means to an end to bettering the team. And then you can have these like stepping stones along the way rather than viewing everything so binary.
As the training camp continues, is there one spot you're super stoked for? One place you can't wait to go?
I mean, I love going home, even if it's not geographically home. So it'll be great to see the Cowboys next week. But yeah, I've got Saints and Broncos to wrap up this week. And then I'll go to Chargers, Rams, and Cowboys next week. And hopefully hit the Patriots, Jets, and Giants before we finish up. So it's going to be a crazy stretch, but I'm very excited. I'm pretty excited to go to the Saints this week, both because I think it's interesting they've got a quarterback competition going on, and also I covered Kellen Moore when he was a backup quarterback, and then he was the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator a few stops. So, like, I'm not that old, but this is my 10th season covering the league, and this is the first guy I've really seen go from, like, player to head coach and kind of watch that. So I get all proud little or big sister, depending on who you're defining, which, by the way, there was a player at the Commanders who used to play for the Cowboys who likes to call me Little Jory. And I was like looking it up and I'm like, you are 5 years younger than me. But I guess like from a weight and height standpoint, I'm Little Jory. So yeah, there's no, that. Yeah.
LJ is a hell of a nickname. I mean, we're just LJ.
Not Little Jory, not to confuse with Little Jordan Humphrey.
Yeah. That's fair.
We gotta Little Jory Humphrey.
Gotta be clear on it. Follow along on Yahoo Sports. I said this the other day with C-Rob, but we've got some of the best reporters in all the land, and y'all are working your tails off to give great reporting from all of these camps. So be sure you're following along in the Yahoo Sports app, and then, of course, wherever you consume Yahoo Sports and across social media, follow Jory, follow me, and come back. We'll be back for two episodes. We're back to two episodes a week. Things are flying. Like, we're straight into the thick of it. So we'll be back Tuesday and Thursday next week with new episodes. If you've listened this far, rate, review, subscribe. We always appreciate that. Take the time to tell somebody to hang out with us, as always. And have a great week. We will be back with more training camp fun for you coming up right around the corner.